Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Boston, San Francisco, New York, these are some of the most progressive and reliably democratic cities in the country. Yet they're also the places that are increasingly pricing out minority, immigrant, young, low-income, and middle-class residents from some neighborhoods. City data shows that a retail salesperson making a typical salary in Boston, for example, now has to pay more than 60% of his or her income to afford an average two-bedroom rental. Author Randy Shaw explores this discrepancy in his new book, Generation Priced Out: Who Gets to Live in the New Urban America? He's the director of the Tenderloin Housing Clinic in San Francisco and a longtime housing and homelessness activist, and he joins me now in studio. Randy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And for a more local perspective on this conversation, we're joined by Greg Vassell. He's the president of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board. Greg, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Have you been priced out of your own neighborhood? How should Boston area preserve and create affordable housing? Real estate taxes? Rent control? Maybe you're a developer worried about the high cost of building around Boston. Well, if you are, you can give us a ring. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or tweet us at Radio Boston. Randy Shaw, let me begin with you and your book. You've been working, I know, on housing policy for a long time. So what inspired you to write this book now?
Well, I was originally inspired by the Ghost Ship fire, which occurred on December 2nd, 2016 in Oakland, which killed 36 people. And a light went off on me and said, well, you know, Oakland used to be the affordable alternative to San Francisco, but now even Oakland wasn't affordable. And I started to look at all these blue cities, progressive cities that claim to support inclusion and racial diversity, yet their land use policies are working against those goals. And, you know, it's gotten so bad. You mentioned about teachers where there's teacher strikes all over the country.
Sure.
Because teachers, it's not that simply that teachers can't afford to live in specific neighborhoods in all these cities I write about. They can't afford to live in the cities they teach anywhere. And it's a big problem. And our cities have to change. We have to build more housing. We have to get rid of exclusionary zoning and protect tenants better. But mainly, we have failed for decades to build enough housing in almost every major city in the country.
And you write about that Ghost Ship fire as an example of people getting priced out of legitimate housing. They had resorted to illegal housing in that case. So
right.
Who do you blame primarily for that phenomenon?
Well, I blame there's a number of factors. For the low-income side, it's obviously the federal government not funding people, and 75% of the families entitled to federal housing assistance don't get it. But for the people who earn more than that, working people, it's really local land use policies where you have vast stretches of Oakland and San Francisco and Berkeley and Boston and every city I named, Austin and Minneapolis until they just changed it, where you are not allowed to build an apartment building. And this will surprise your listeners because they have an image of San Francisco as being a very tenant town. Over half of San Francisco, you can build a mansion, but not an apartment building. You can't build a triplex, but you can build a mansion. Why is our zoning set up to facilitate mansions for rich people and not more affordable housing for the millennials who desperately need it? And that's what I write about in Generation Priced Out.
And Greg Vassell, how do you see the state of housing here in Greater Boston? I mean, do you see some of the problems that Randy is raising, or is this just the free market? I mean, you know, we do live in a capitalist country. You build and you make a profit. That's what developers do, right?
Yeah, Randy and I actually agree on this, and we've struggled with this in Boston. When the new Walsh administration came in, the whole thought was we want to build denser, we want to build higher, and a lot of people were alarmed by that. Many people in Boston like the look and feel of the neighborhood. But they're not really crazy about going higher and denser. A couple weeks ago, there was a story in the Boston Globe about an area in Reedville that was some transit-oriented development. It lent itself perfectly for some dense housing development. Local community, NIMBY activists, we don't want this in our community. And that's a problem. If we're going to be a world-class city, we've got to embrace things like that and build on property and land like that.
Right. Those Reedville residents kind of felt like they had been shielded from the development for a while, and now all of a sudden developers were discovering them, and they weren't thrilled about it. If you live in Reedville or somewhere else in Boston, please feel free to give us a ring. You can join this conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Brianne is calling from Concord. Hi there, Brianne. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Yep, I live in Concord. I've been here 15 years. I'm a renter. I've wanted to buy, but I'm priced out of the market. Now I'm trying to find other rentals to get out of a situation that I'm in, and it's impossible. Studios here start at around $1,800 a month, little tiny spaces, and one bedroom's around $2,000. And, you know, how much farther out do you have to go to find anything affordable? Or even going further in, closer into Boston where I used to live, everything's just gotten to be, I think it's out of control.
Well, I would say when you artificially restrict supply, as all these cities do, and they don't let you build enough rental housing, the price is going to go up. And the terrible thing is if you were to live in Concord or have to go further away and drive an hour to your job, what about climate change? And we have people driving an hour and a half as a standard course to get it because they have to get the affordable housing. And it's really the major course of major cause of greenhouse gas emissions. So I sympathize very much with your caller.
Brianne, thank you so much for the call. And I'll just point out, as she says, she's paying about $1,800 a month for a studio. That is roughly the state median for at least a one-bedroom, according to the real estate website Zumper. And other places, of course, are much more expensive. In Boston, for example, the median for a one-bedroom right now is $2,390 a month. It's the same in Brookline. Quincy, a little bit cheaper, a little under $2,000 a month. But Greg Vassily, I'm sure you're familiar with these figures. You know this market well. How much does Brianne's story resonate, and do you have any guidance for her?
It absolutely resonates with me, and we fight this fight all the time up on Beacon Hill. Many communities don't have appropriate zoning for multifamily development, and we see this not exclusively, but to a great deal in the suburbs especially. You can't expect cities like Boston to carry the entire load for housing production. You need the local communities. And that's one of the reasons why when the governor filed his housing bill 2 years ago, he brought in the mayors from the local communities surrounding the city, because it has to be a regional effort. It can't be looked at as one community solving everybody's problems.
You know, especially, and as you well know, Massachusetts has a state law which requires a two-thirds vote for housing approvals. Now, why? Why are we trying to discourage housing to such an extent? So even cities that have a majority vote for a project, that's not sufficient.
And that's the exact law we're trying to get rid of in some of the legislation that's up on Beacon Hill right now.
We're talking with Randy Shaw. He's the director of the Tenderloin Housing Clinic in San Francisco and author of Generation Priced Out, Who Gets to Live in the New Urban America, and also with Greg Vassil, who is the president of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Anne is in Jamaica Plain. Hi there, Anne.
Hi. I was calling to ask what's being done by our elected officials to oversee and kind of control developers. Like, there's one called City Realty Group that I was notified of. I live in Jamaica Plain. I'm a community health nurse. I'm a long-term resident. I have two kids I'm raising in the city. And I see so many neighbors getting pushed out, priced out because of new sort of high-end loft luxury condo buildings. And City Realty, I guess I got a action alert, is sort of forcing out some local small businesses and other neighbors that make our community the kind of place why so many people want to live here, diverse, vibrant, and they tout being like local community members from Boston, and they have a nonprofit arm that supports kids in the city. But when I looked into it, it just seemed too good to be true. I looked them up, and this group, City Kids, their nonprofit, is actually run out of Brookline, Mass, and doesn't really seem to be doing everything they say it's doing. So I just want someone in city government to be sort of a watchdog on this, as my neighbors are getting priced out, and it's really changing the fabric of our neighborhood in a not a positive way. So I don't know if the author has any suggestions or insight into this kind of dynamic.
Well, a nonprofit should not be doing that. If that were a for-profit entity in Massachusetts, and, you know, in any city, you don't have any right to rent control or just cause eviction. So anytime a landlord, if someone wants to come in and just raise the rent and turn over your building, you can't stop it. And I think that's something that all the cities that have banned rent controls have to, at the state level, have to relook at, because the ability just to tell a long-term resident like your caller that, hey, you can just have to leave because we just don't want you here anymore, That's not fair. In California, we have just – in San Francisco, Los Angeles, we have just cause eviction, and landlords are doing quite well with it. So I think it's definitely consistent, and but that's the kind of thing that happens in Massachusetts.
And I know, you know, Randy, you have a lot of case studies in your book, one of which is right in our backyard in Cambridge, and particularly in Central Square. What did you find going on there that caught your attention?
Well, Cambridge is really one of the most interesting housing environments in the country because you have, you know, sort of a progressive split over development and where things are going, and there's a big fight right now over an affordable housing overlay, which they just had a huge turnout last night in, at a hearing. And so hopefully it'll have a happy ending. But, you know, the question of people, as Greg said, who just don't want anything built and feel like Cambridge and other cities are big enough versus people who say, hey, we can expand affordability by increasing density.
I want to bring in another voice to the conversation. Nancy Ryan is president of the Cambridge Residents Alliance. She's very familiar with what's going on in that city and in Central Square, and she joins us now on the line. Nancy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. The author may not be aware that we actually worked to do some upzoning in Central Square just in the last year and a half, but we upzoned to a reasonable level of, you know, five, six stories up over two or three stories. But the project that the author lists in his book was Mass and Main. It's a huge development of 308 units that was going to be and now is almost completed. It's three times what the height zoning was allowing, making a huge wall in front of the poorest neighborhood in Cambridge. And it's got 90 studios. The two beds go for $3,758, and the three beds go for $4,400. So I don't know the families that are going to be able to afford that. And the 20% inclusionary units for low-income people that we have fought for, that 20% is going to come out of some of these 90 studios. So we really haven't ended up with a project that is really going to serve the needs of the community for low and moderate family housing. So that was the project that was referenced in the book, and I was a little disappointed that no one ever spoke to us before they understood why we might oppose it.
Well, unless Cambridge has completely done its inclusionary housing law, every inclusionary housing law I'm aware of, the inclusionary affordable units have to match the unit type. So they couldn't – there has to be two-bedroom units as that inclusionary, unless Cambridge has done an inclusionary law that I've never heard of because
– Oh, no, no. That's the inclusionary law. That's the complaint that you got 90 studios. And so a huge percentage of the inclusionary units for lower-income people are going to be studios.
Well, it has to mirror the market rate. That's all I'm saying. Okay.
Yeah. But,
Nancy.
So there will be two-bedroom affordable ones because two-bedroom market rate are being built.
Nancy, though,
a few. We actually we had to lobby for 10 affordable three-bedrooms in order to allow them to have any number of studios that they wanted. And so they're building out a third of their project as studios.
Nancy, I wanted to ask you while we have you, just what your sort of more intangible concerns might be about overdevelopment in Cambridge, because it is a city with a lot of historic housing, very pretty buildings and whatnot, and there is a certain character to it that I understand your group wants to preserve as well. Tell me about that.
Well, our group doesn't talk about the character of the neighborhoods. What we talk about is the safety and security of the neighborhoods. And so, for instance, some of the larger development that's going on in Cambridge is going on in floodplains that will endanger the housing that's getting built there as well as the adjacent neighborhoods because they will be not protected through the floodplain. So the developers are building luxury units in very dangerous places, and we're concerned about that. We are concerned about things like our tree canopy and all, but we think there are very healthy trade-offs between larger buildings than we have now in some of the neighborhoods where the houses are smaller and the yards are larger. We think that we haven't been given a really good look at what are the trade-offs and where can we make them. Instead, we're being told buy this one-size-fits-all 100% affordable overlay versus what are some real meaningful trade-offs. And we're thinking that the public discussion that really was large and wonderful last night is going to continue while we refine this and we come to some understanding of how we can really add meaningful affordable housing in the city.
All right. Nancy Ryan from the Cambridge Residents Alliance, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
We're talking about housing in Greater Boston and beyond with Randy Shaw, author of Generation Priced Out, Who Gets to Live in the New Urban America, and Greg Vassell, president of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board. And Greg, I want to come back to you now. The concerns that Nancy is describing in Cambridge, I mean, how commonplace is that? Is that sort of isolated to that one city, or is she speaking for a much broader region?
Well, I mean, some of the comments that she just made are interesting, and they're echoed other places. Housing is a crisis. I think everybody agrees to that. But then we're also worried about losing land to climate change, which is a concern. But we would rely on our government entities not to direct us to allow us to build in areas that are going to be turned into Venice in the not-too-distant future. So it is, but it's frustrating because if housing is really a priority, we should throw everything we have at trying to produce housing. The other stuff, we'll figure it out. But housing should be paramount because it really helps our economy. If people don't have places to live, the companies won't come here.
Let's see if we can squeeze in a few more calls before the hour is out. Steve is giving us a ring from Alston. Hi there, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I work with a lot of international students who come to Boston for the high-quality universities. And I don't know if your guests are familiar with this. There are several buildings around the Downtown Crossing neighborhood, Science Park, West End, that are essentially dormitories. And these developers build these really big high-rise apartments that are extremely expensive. I'm talking $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a month. And families from overseas, very, very wealthy families, have an essentially unlimited pool of money to send their kids to school in Boston and put them up in these posh apartments. And if I'm a developer and I know that that's one spigot of money that I can count on being essentially unlimited, then I have no motive to build affordable housing because I can have these huge, these high-margin housing units that I build, and I know that the students are going to show up. So I'm wondering if there's something that can be done about that, not to chase students away, but just to make sure that everybody has an equal cut of the pie.
Well, one thing you do in San Francisco, and I'm friends with a developer named Patrick Kennedy, who contracts with schools to build the housing, and they agree on the rate beforehand. So that's what schools should do. And increasingly in San Francisco, they are.
Steve, thanks for the ring. Joseph is calling from Fitchburg. Joseph, what's going on up in Fitchburg? You're pretty far out of the city. I would think that it would be cheap housing up there, no? What are you finding?
It's a little of both, but there's a lot of disingenuousness around this issue from so many sides, and I'm curious what the author thinks about the fact that it's not the 1% that are behind this, it's the 20%. They will go to great lengths to protect their little enclaves. And the developers have literally no reason to build affordable housing anywhere in any urban center in the United States. There's too much money out there in this country and other countries, as your last caller just brought forth. And I'm curious what he thinks about what can be done, because we constantly talk about housing as if it were an isolated issue or that rent control is the answer, which I think New York has conclusively demonstrated not so much. But we need to get together as a community, but people need to give up their little bailiwick and realize they don't own this little fiefdom of who lives next door.
Well, Joseph, you've just hit the exact one of the major themes of Generation Priced Out, which is homeowners deciding that no apartment should be built in their neighborhood inflates the cost overall. The reason you keep hearing about Wall Street developers is because that's the only place you can build in the downtown areas. The neighbors have, because of homeowner pressure, and of course, homeowners are making out like bandits. The best job you can have in San Francisco is to be a single-family home. You make $60,000 a year, and you don't have to go to work in equity. It's a great deal.
You can work from home.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Joseph, thanks for the ring. I do want to, Joseph mentioned possible solutions, and I do want to raise one other. Boston City Councilor Lydia Edwards has an idea for how we might address this housing crisis in Boston. She is proposing a tax of up to 6% on all real estate transactions over $2 million and up to 25% tax on properties sold more than once in a two-year period, basically like a flipping tax. So here she is describing her proposal for higher fees.
How could we not try to capture as much income right now in one of the best economies, the time where we're building the most in Boston? How could we not try to capture some of that income to direct it 100% towards affordable housing?
So Greg Vassell, president of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board, how about that? Does that proposal sound like a good one to you?
We do not support the transfer tax. And one of the reasons why is it captures such a small amount of the transactions. I think that as an industry, we would look very carefully at something that was more broadly across the board that affected everyone. For example, like the CPA in Boston that was put in, which is a surcharge on real estate taxes that everybody pays. So I think that would be something that the industry would take a long, hard look at if it was more evenly portioned out.
Well, this is where Greg and I disagree. I think that you get a lot of credit to that council member for putting that forward. And I would have the opposite view. Because it only affects 500 transactions, that's a perfect thing to tax. You're taxing only the really super rich, and that's a great thing for Boston. Unfortunately, it has to win at the state level, which could be challenging, but good for Boston for trying.
The one thing that was disconcerting was at the hearing, the city's assessing department was very concerned that it was going to drive down the cost of buildings and it was going to result in lower property taxes realized for the city. So that's a concern.
We're just about out of time for today, so thank you so much to all of our callers for your participation today. We know the board is lit up, and I'm sorry we didn't get to all of you, but you can comment at radioboston.org or feel free to tweet us at Radio Boston. Randy Shaw's new book is called Generation Priced Out, Who Gets to Live in the New Urban America. He'll be at Porter Square Books tonight, and there's more information at our website, radioboston.org. Randy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And we were also joined by Greg Vassell, president of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board. Greg, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And Nancy Ryan joined us as well from the Cambridge Residents Alliance. Our thanks to her as well. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Callum Borchers. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.